Hello, everyone, and welcome to Food Disruptors, an IFT podcast that brings you the latest insights and perspectives from some of the brightest minds in the science of food. Each episode, our guests discuss the ever-changing intersection of entrepreneurship, innovation, and science and their roles in advancing our global food system. The COVID-19 pandemic continues to pull the global food system into new and uncertain territory. Much of this uncertainty stems from the rapid shifts in consumer behaviors as a result of our collective new normal. I'm your host, Matt Teagarden, and today we're going to continue our conversation with experts on consumer behavior and insights. This is the second episode of my conversation with Dr. Chris Simons, Associate Professor at The Ohio State University in the Department of Food Science and Technology, Dr. Elizabeth Sloan, the president of Sloan Trends and a contributing editor of Food Technology Magazine, Dr. Catherine Adams-Hutt, the chief science and regulatory officer of Sloan Trends, and Grant Prentice, senior vice president and director of strategic insights at Food Minds. So we've had a great discussion on how trends and behaviors are shifting in the retail food space, but I want to pivot and focus on food service specifically. Grant, do you mind giving us a quick overview of what is going on in that world right now?
Oh, no, absolutely. You know, I think that the food industry, food service industry has been hit very, very hard by shelter in place. And the mandates of closed dining rooms, you know, even though pickup and delivery have remained open. I think restaurants obviously have really suffered here. And you even have, you know, this sort of hidden part of the food service industry, institutional feeders that have been badly hit by colleges, sports and entertainment venues, hotels, places of business, other institutions that have, you know, closed down either because the workers aren't there, or the audience, or the spectators aren't there, or literally the business has just been closed as a function of the mandate. So across the that sort of, again, fragmented, kind of atomized eating environment, you know, defined by different places and different need states, it's just been, you know, sucked up and everything's been sent home. And you know, I think that the extent of that is really showing. I mean, even in, you know, QSRs, you know, QSRs have been hit, even though they have a very strong sort of drive-through business.
What is QSR? You know, sorry.
I'm sorry, quick service restaurants, you know, fast food, essentially, which have a very significant portion of their business through that drive-through. But they've even been very badly hit and are finding that, that in and of itself does not make for a going concern, that they've had, you know, really struggled to sort of meet their numbers. And anybody else who has just dabbled in it or tried to sort of reverse engineer into it, has found that it's a very, very difficult thing to do. And again, it does not make up for the losses that they're seeing in the dining room.
Interesting. What are some of the facts and figures there?
QSR, in terms of sales declines, is off about 42%. Casual dining is down about low 70s, and fine dining is off about 82% in terms of overall sales.
Wow.
For this period of time. So those are, you know, significant losses. And it's really unfortunate for the people that are employed at food service as well, and in other parts of the food value chain. This is an industry that has knock-on effects out into equipment, operational services, marketing companies. I mean, NRA estimates restaurants are about a $900 billion a year industry. There are estimates that it's going to be off by $180 billion in consumer spending, and it reduced by about $70 billion in terms of the operators' spending on those other services. So it's about a $250 billion hit within 2020 in terms of the lost revenues. Wow. And people's wages that are affected by this crisis. So, you know, it's affecting the consumer's eating patterns. It's also affecting all of these people's lifestyles and income and their jobs, drastically. So I think that's something that we have to keep in mind. And some of the kind of cultural shopping consumption trends that have been affected by the mandated behavior change are going to be sustained by the economic realities that we find ourselves in, as a function not only of what's happening in the food service, but other industries as well. And people, you know, very high levels of people filing for unemployment, as Liz pointed out.
Okay, so is the shift to enhanced takeout operations helping here?
So there's this, you know, velocity of consumption that's missing. There was a survey that asked, you know, those operators that were still doing a business through takeout, whether or not that was making up for the lost income in the dining room. And only about 14% of those operators that were doing that said that it did, that it offset what they were losing in the dining room. Almost 90% said, no way. There's no way that this is something that we can survive with. So it's a very, very challenging environment.
And how are consumer behaviors around food service shifting under COVID?
You know, the consumer, again, consumers' behavior's been mandated. You can't eat out. Don't bother going out. If you do go out, don't go near anybody. Right. Make sure you got a mask on. You're not going to be able to eat out if you got a mask on. It's just the whole day. It's not conducive to the procurement and consumption of food outside the home. It's everything, you know, about the consumer's experience and their mindset and their perceptions are being shaped by these behaviors. And, you know, as I pointed out earlier, we eat as we live, particularly as Americans. We eat on the run. We graze throughout the day in multiple locations. We're very mobile. We're very gregarious. You know, the whole food system, and in particular food service, is built to serve up this kind of like as I need it, need state that the food consumer in the United States has. And that has been completely transformed. And people are test driving over a very long period of time, you know, a completely new set of need states or seldom touched upon need states that are now, you know, part of their ongoing eating behaviors and are likely to become part of their ongoing eating behaviors. So you have this traditional kind of eating on the run points of contact or a service that's there to accommodate that. And that has really, I think, been transformed, obviously, in the short term. I think it's also going to change in the long term. I think you may see people doing less of that, that sort of overall grazing that people are engaging in within the food service channel is going to be reduced even as restaurants come back online. So it's a very difficult environment for the operator and certainly for the food service consumer. Hmm.
Anybody have any sort of immediate thoughts on what Grant presented there? Really interesting stuff.
Well, I would just like to add, I think, you know, it's, as you're pointing out, it's so tough, but when you really look at who's going to the restaurants, at least QSR or fast casual, you know, they're younger people and they're the ones who are getting hit. Probably, well, everybody likes to think it's the seniors, but the data doesn't prove that out. The seniors still have their own money, even their 401ks or whatever. But anyway, these younger people are the ones that are, they're out there working and they're, you know, grazing and stopping by and all that. And we all know when the economy gets bad, they don't go as often. So it's like a double whammy. And even like the coffee thing, you know, now that people, everybody's 27% that make more at home. Oh boy, there goes the morning morsels and the second stop to get something else to eat. And it's just a snowball.
Yeah, Liz, there seems like maybe there's some interaction or some overlap with some of the more grocery store trends that you were kind of talking about last time.
Yeah, I was just thinking of that when Grant was talking. I was saying, is this an opportunity for although the deli and it, you know, so many are closed and they have all these other problems, but they've been looking for some real opportunities. When you're doing your shopping trip to pick up some of these things, I mean, when you think about people taking frozen appetizers to work, they're going some distance on that. So, I mean, maybe there's a lot more opportunities that they will accept, seriously, across the board, in light of going to at least more of the stop and go type of things in the restaurants. I hate to see it. It's just, it's very, very sad.
Yeah.
But
it is. And I think the consumer again has been taught to a certain extent, you know, obviously, and probably for good reason, to be concerned. And so you see about, you know, surveys that ask consumers about how they're feeling about eating out in a restaurant. You've got about 2/3 of them who are saying they definitely avoid eating out, even as these restaurants come back online. Mm. And you got about another 20% who say they're nervous. It's something they're going to engage in, but there's some nervousness there. You only have about 15% who are like, I got no concerns. I'm going to go out and eat. And those numbers have held pretty steady since March. So that's kind of like a little bit of, at least for now, an ingrained sort of level of wariness in going back into the channel. Now, I think it's an interesting point that Liz made in terms of the economic circumstances of younger consumers that are probably going to put a little bit of a break on their, or a significant break on their expenditures in that channel. It's unfortunate that those are the people who tend to have the lowest level of concern about eating in the restaurant channel. Older folks, boomers, and also parents are segments that tend to have a higher level of concern and reported avoidance of eating out, even as these restaurants are going to come back online. So there's a full measure of reluctance and caution there when people are thinking about returning. But you know, I hear all those things, and as a researcher, I kind of fall back on, yeah, but there's this cultural and I think inherent human preference to eat with other people. Mm-hmm. And public dining is part of who we are. Again, particularly in the United States, it's I think even as human beings, it's kind of loaded in our prehistoric genes. You know, we hunted and foraged in groups. We ate what we found or killed as a group. You know, we do this in groups. It's been there forever. And so, you know, you have this real level of concern. And advice and governmental restrictions and mandates. And I think even restaurant channels that are restaurant operators that as they come online are being very cautious about the way that they're doing this. And there is a level of nervousness there. But I think ultimately, you know, the consumer is going to come back. People value and enjoy eating out. They want to be able to do that. They don't want to bring everything home. They want that external cultural, social kind of engagement.
If I can dovetail on Grant's point, though, a point about being social and wanting to dine with others, that's even a better way to live. It's a healthier way to live. You know, certainly part of the Mediterranean diet, why it's so successful, is it's not just about the food. It's about the lifestyle. And the lifestyle includes eating with others, being social. And I think it's a very important part for health and wellness. But I think there's a conundrum that we also need to call out too, which is, I think, just the economic juggernaut that for consumers to go back, the restaurants have to be open. In order for the restaurants to be open, they have to be able to make enough money to stay open. And they can't make money when they turn 15 tables a night. They'll have the staff, they're trying to staff up to be ready for people. And the issue is if people don't come, and this is this time period is so critical, because if people say they're going to do and are slow to go back into social settings and restaurants are slow to be able to let enough people in the doors in order to turn the tables, then literally it's an economic reality that this is an equation that can't work very well. I certainly hope that that isn't the case, but the health and well-being of our restaurants, you know, tied to the health and well-being of our consumers and our individuals, our population, are all kind of at a critical point here.
They sure are. That is such a good point. There is this issue of velocity. I got to have a certain number of patrons through my restaurant in a given period of time, given the staff that I have in the back, the staff that I have out front, and the cost of foods and everything I got tied up in the capital. I have to be able to have a certain number of patrons through my restaurant in a certain period of time. And if anybody has eaten in any large urban environment these days, those tables are close together because that velocity requirement in food service is pretty steep. It's tough to make money. And I think that's going to be a really challenging piece. I think the other thing, and this is, I think people haven't really figured this out yet, but I think that the value equation for the consumer in the restaurant channel and the need state has changed, at least for the next 2 to 3 months as these things come back online, and maybe even for longer than that. Signals from restaurant operators to indicate to the consumer that they understand that value equation and that need state has changed, I think are those operators are going to be rewarded. So whether that's through enhanced hygiene, cleaning procedures, waiting and kitchen staff that are wearing masks, maybe the tables are widened and spaced a little bit, I think all of those different types of things are going to be important for restaurants to signal to consumers that they understand them. They know they want to be able to dine out. They want to be able to dine out in that safe environment. It's just finding the pricing, spacing, training scenario and signals, particularly on hygiene and cleanliness and things like that, that are going to be important for operators to be indicating to the consumer.
I want to jump over to Chris here, actually, because I think this builds really well. My sciencey sense is tingling a little bit here, Chris, knowing your research a little bit. So as these restaurants open back up, I think we've all acknowledged that the environment is going to be probably different from a necessity standpoint to maintain a safe environment. So as this environment changes, I'm curious on your comments as to how, consumer preference might also change given your research background.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really an interesting question. I mean, so clearly it's going to be different, right? And so much of how we sort of assess our enjoyment and our, liking or reward that's associated with a food or a situation or experience is really based on prior experiences and those expectations that those prior experiences set, right? So it's going to be very different when you are used to going to your favorite restaurant where, as Grant said, you're right on top of each other, right? And now I have to, have 6 feet between me and my spouse and, 12 feet between me and my neighbor. And so that's a totally different context. And if your expectation was built on something that, had a very different sort of substrate or structure that underpinned it. I think that's going to be, we're going to have to learn new, I guess, norms or develop expectations that are consistent with our realities. I think this whole idea of the social, I mean, it's clear, right? Social, the meals, and especially in fine dining and restaurant, it's oftentimes is a social event, right? My family, we look, it's a source of entertainment on Friday nights, right? We all look forward to where we're going to go out to eat and what are we going to, are going to have. And so I think it contributes to quality of life. And so when those things change, it's going to change how we view those experiences. And I think Grant hit it on the head, right? Those companies and those restaurants that sort of figure that out and figure out how to best sort of meet the consumer's needs and their expectations. And those expectations are evolving right now. Those part of those expectations are going to be, a sanitary environment, a place where somebody's not sitting on top of me coughing. Right. But if they can figure out how to do that and still make money, obviously, and recreate an experience which meets or exceeds my expectations, then, then they'll be successful. But I think it is going to be a learning experience, both for the restaurants as well as for consumers. I think we can't, as you know, consumers of food service, I don't think we can go in and expect what we had, you know, 6 months ago.
Can somebody lead the way? I'll ask that of Catherine and Grant. I mean, it seems that maybe I don't want to say anybody's name in vain, but somebody like McDonald's could certainly, with their incredible standards and supply chain. I don't know. I'm kind of thinking out loud here. And then so many of the ones that have had serious safety problems, who will remain unnamed, in the last year or two, is there something with the safety thing that could help drive this a little bit? If people are so concerned, and we've all seen those numbers, they're going to wait a month before they go back, even when it's open.
I think there's a huge opportunity there. That comment and that question is a great comment. It makes me think of another sort of overriding theme that I have in the back of my head, or an overriding concern in the back of my head, as we're looking at all this data, we're looking at the experiences that people have, we're looking at the experiences that the food industry has had in just managing their way through this process. And I can't help but feel like the price of food, and I think this might be particularly true for the food service channel, is going to go up. Because if I think particularly in food service, if I'm going to deliver on those logistics and I'm going to be able to deliver on those concerns, which are now larger than just the food that I'm serving and the experience that I'm offering within the restaurant, but my ability to do those things in a safe way are going to change the dynamics and the velocity and the flow of those consumers through those environments. And if that's the case, in some of those segments, that is going to have an impact on pricing. If they want to be able to come back, if consumers see value in that, I think some of those price structures may well change.
Right. Well, Catherine, I think this really calls back to what you were saying earlier about consumer attitude towards food safety. So I'm curious on your comments here as well.
Well, I think that the major point is that, you know, Liz asked the question, can somebody lead? And yes, you know, that is true. But I think the answer is going to be someone who has a company who has the not only intestinal fortitude, but also the economic fortitude to step forward and be able to pay their payroll, to be open, right, and visible, and also pay their supply chain and purchasing for, you know, the food costs and everything else, and be able to sustain over a relatively long period of time, weeks, if not months, an ability to show the world that, you know, we can be open, we're available, we're going to be here, we can be responsible. And I think there are several that can do that. The food service industry, and I'm sure Grant can vouch for this or speak to it, but tend to be fast followers. They don't tend to be leaders of social change. They can be, and there certainly are notable exceptions to that, but clearly it's going to take a company with a tremendous ethical as well as personal outreach and ability, deep pockets, if you will, to really be able to do that. I don't think people are seeing the issue as a food safety issue. I really don't see that in any data or any reflection. I think they need to be told it's not a food safety issue. And I think that is a very, I should say, a visible sign, again, put out by the federal government as well as others. I don't hear people worrying about food safety. They worry about food handlers. They worry about who is putting my plate in front of my face and feeding me. They worry about what's happening back of house. And they may have always been worried about what happens in the back of house, but now they're really worried because they can't see that. And they don't know, again, the policies that the restaurants would be putting in place for sick workers, which have always been in place, but now need to be reinforced and monitored even more than ever, because they've become critically important, not just really important, or I should say really, really, really critically important, not just critically important. And so I think there's lots of opportunity here. I hope that the industry can step forward with leaders who can show that, again, we can be open, we can be responsible. And I pray that there is not a stumble or someone who causes a problem or there's some evidence of that, because I would think that would take the industry back. But I trust that will not happen.
I think that's well said. I think that, you know, it isn't the food that's the issue, or food safety that's the issue at all. It's people. It's those individuals that are perhaps working there. I think equally as concerning are the other patrons, the presence of other fellow diners in the restaurant, that I'm increasing my exposure to other individuals who, you know, where there may be an issue, and I'm vulnerable to that. I think the comments made about sort of who are the people who might lead the way, I think, you know, it's interesting, those folks down at the QSR end of the spectrum, the quick service restaurant, fast casual end of the spectrum, that have very sophisticated operational capabilities, knowledge, expertise, can kind of turn on a dime. Those may be, well, the people that will lead in this area and be able to sort that out. I think at the other end are folks who are, you know, working with higher margins and maybe not as dense a dining room as those folks that are in the middle, those casual family kind of operations. You may see some folks at the higher end leading the way as well and being fairly successful with that. But it's in any case, at any level, it's going to be a real challenge.
So I think at this point, you know, I'm curious as to everyone's sort of final thoughts on the topic of food service in a post-COVID world. You know, we're just at such a critical time where things are starting to reopen. I think I just saw here in Ohio where I am, I think maybe next week they're going to start opening patios and the week after they're going to start opening restaurants. I haven't looked too fine into the detail of what that actually looks like, but I'm curious as to, you know, now that we're moving into this time where things are starting to open in a lot of places, you know, what's the impact here and how will consumers, you know, continue to, I'll say, interact in a very broad term with restaurants and food service as we move forward? Grant, let's start with you.
Yeah, I think that the, you know, in addition to all the things that we've talked about, which is this, I think, overcoming this reluctance. And I think that we will be able to get past that. And I think that that will evolve. It may take a while, and it's going to take some people to lead in the space. I think the one piece that's interesting to me that has been, you know, the comment was made about this crisis putting a magnifying glass over parts of the food system or the food value equation that aren't working very well, and sort of highlighting those problems. I think it's in the restaurant channel, it is sort of third-party delivery, that last mile delivery order or e-commerce piece of the industry that was struggling anyway, you know, from a profit standpoint and getting things done and making money. And I think even the relationships with both the consumer and the food service operator in terms of the amount of money that was required and the impact on margins for the operator. And I think what's happened here is that there's been a sharp uptick and reliance on those third-party operators out there that are delivering food from restaurants. And it has made it very clear, I think, both to the consumer and to the operator that the current approach doesn't really work very well. And I think you're even seeing some smart operators already shift to managing their own digital platforms, their own delivery systems, particularly for a well-developed regional brand. And there are a couple here in Chicago that they dabble with third party, but it's not really their primary delivery system. They have their own. They've taken that on themselves. And I think that they've realized that the data and the relationship that they have with the customer is worth the additional investment, and that they can, in some cases, if they have a strong enough brand, price their products accordingly to cover some of those costs that happen in that delivery exchange, and that the consumer will pay for the convenience. But it's sort of navigating that price point. I think that's that whole approach and what's happening there will change. Exactly what it looks like, not sure yet, but I think you're going to see a lot of shifts there.
Right. Anybody else have any final thoughts here?
Sure. I'll just add too, I think, you know, what I've heard term that the pandemic has been like an x-ray. It has been able to show us our weaknesses, where we're weak. And I think that relates also to the restaurant industry and food service overall. It also shows where we're strong too. And I think we have great personnel practices and some really strong leaders in the restaurant industry that are stepping forward and really trying to change things and protect their workers in a very, very positive way. I think if I could ask for one thing, it would be a public relations campaign, if you will, for the media, including the social media, to spread the word that this industry can be open, it can be helpful, it can be interesting and entertaining, it can be nourishing, it can be nutritious, it can be there for people to go to. Feel free to go, be encouraged to go, that it can work in a positive way relative and prior to a vaccine anyway, relative to social distancing, safe handling practices, back of house, front of house, the exceptional hygiene demonstration of that throughout the entire business. And heaven sakes, yes, we've, you know, learned to wash our hands and we can show that too. But I think that's really one of a huge thing that will continue. But I certainly think we need some help just getting that word out, and hopefully that can happen.
Excellent. I think that's a great idea. Well, I can sum up by saying, give them a great martini or a second generation Happy Meal, and they will come.
I will take a lot of those.
Works
at
for me.
At the same time.
Right. Chris?
Oh, I was going to say, I think I agree with all of the comments. I think that, you know, obviously, probably even maybe even more so than eating at home, right? That restaurants are really this social event that has an entertainment factor that's associated with it. And I think humans are by nature, we're social creatures and we seek these things out. And so I think, you know, the vast majority of people are probably hoping that restaurants come back successfully and are, you know, sort of rooting for restaurants to open their doors and be able to, you know, meet our needs and our expectations. And as long as it's done in a way that protects people and you know, doesn't put them at more risk. And I think Catherine hit it right on the head, right? We have a long history of success in this industry. And so we hopefully can see them rebound and get back into it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the consumer, you know, has some concerns there as they return to the restaurant and food service channel. And I think those can be managed. I do think that the one thing that we see in surveys of what people miss or what people can't wait to get back to, you know, once this all sorts itself out, are all things that are related to food service and eating out, whether it's just eating out in a restaurant directly and sitting down to a meal and having somebody prepare something for me and bring it to me. You know, that's something that people really miss. It's usually the second or first thing that's mentioned in any one of those surveys. I think the other things that are missed are things like sporting events or concerts or other kinds of big gatherings where there's food service. So, you know, those pieces are there, that demand is there, it's going to come back, it's going to migrate there, but it can be accelerated, I think, by sending the right kinds of signals to the consumer.
Well, I want to thank you all for your time and your insights in this awesome conversation that we've had. And I'd also like to thank our listeners. If you're enjoying Food Disruptors, please let us know by leaving a review on iTunes or by connecting with IFT. You can find us at IFT on Twitter and by searching the Institute of Food Technologists on Facebook and LinkedIn. For more information and resources related to COVID-19, visit ift.org. Thanks so much for listening to Food Disruptors. I'm your host, Matt Teagarden. Have a great day, everyone.